become a nightmare beyond imagining.
Welcome back to Eco Talk, your home for sound solutions. We are discussing the death of environmentalism. This is part two, the other side of that controversy. We're speaking with some leaders in the environmental movement, such as it is, to get their impressions of that paper launched last fall that has generated a lot of controversy. If you'd like to read more about it, go to grist.org. They, I think, still have new pieces, essays on it. And in that piece, the established environmental movement organizations like the Sierra Club, Environmental Defense, NRDC, were taken to task a bit for not having been successful enough in really not only reaching the American public, but in being successful in Washington with politicians, with legislators, in terms of getting, you know, some success on issues like fuel efficiency. And they're saying we have, you know, global warming that we're facing, and the way the environmental movement is poised now, we're not going to be able to sufficiently address it. We need to bury this movement so we can give birth to a new one that's bigger, more compelling, maybe speaks a language that more Americans can relate to. And because it was the environmental leadership, whatever that is, that was really taken to task, I wanted to get some spokespeople from some of the larger environmental organizations. Carl Pope has been very outspoken on this issue, but he talked about it so much he got tired of talking about it. So he passed. But John Kaufman with the NRDC, Deputy Director of Communications, was nice enough to take a few minutes out of his busy schedule to give us his impressions of that essay. Thanks for joining us, John.
Hi, Betsy. Good to talk to you.
So what did you think when you first read it? Not necessarily, you know, we've heard a lot of, you know, back and forth over the last 6 months, but what did you first think?
Well, I mean, it's certainly an interesting piece of work. And Schellenberger and Nordhaus raise a lot of very interesting, very important questions, and they're the kind of questions that we've spent a lot of time inside NRDC and I think inside the community of environmental and conservation activists in general asking ourselves, different organizations in different ways and to different results. The questions are important ones. Frankly, we found the answers in this report just a little bit frustrating. In the cultural and political landscape that we're operating in today, we absolutely agree that we have to be speaking more effectively to a broader cross-section of the American public. That's particularly true in today's media climate, which is very different than it was when organizations like NRDC were founded 35 years ago, when you had three network nightly newscasts and Uncle Walter Cronkite was there to tell you what the news was and how it happened. Today, of course, people are getting their news from a multitude of cable channels, from talk radio, from the Daily Show, from
Internet.
Comedy sources, and it's a much, much more diffuse sort of public space that we're operating in.
The Internet has played a big role, too, with Alternet, Move On, in terms of getting progressive. It shouldn't be a progressive issue like the environment, but getting there's certainly so much more environmental content just in the 8 years that I've been doing EcoTalk.
Sure. I mean, well, for progressives, but you know, for folks who view themselves as being on the other side of the political spectrum, and for people who aren't coming at it from a political or even from a special interest perspective at all. And that's really part of the challenge, is how do we continue to make environmental issues relevant in a way that move the political process and move businesses towards better outcomes without getting ourselves tangled up in our own language, without becoming any more politically marginalized than I think sometimes it feels like we are.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you think
frustrating part for me, I think, in reading the very spirited critique that came from Death Environmentalism was the absence of any clear solution.
Mm-hmm.
The paper, I think, gives some short shrift to some very real progress that's been made on global warming, among other issues, and also on the caliber of the public dialogue that organizations like NRDC is engaged in, that programs like EcoTalk are working on as well. But I think that perhaps they gloss over some of the context in which this discussion is taking place.
Well, one of the failures they pointed to was the CAFE Standards Initiative, which, of course, went down to defeat in 2002, March 13th. I remember that day. Why blame the environmental establishment for that? How about blaming the car industry that lobbied so hard and spent so much money to get, you know, legislators and car-producing states to vote against it?
Right. I mean, you know, certainly on issues like fuel economy, we've gone headlong into campaigns of in which much money is being spent on scare tactics and on changing the topic. And whether or not the public really believes this is hard to say. Certainly it's provided the kind of cover that lawmakers need to vote the wrong way on this and given them the kind of comfort space that's made it so difficult to work through the legislative process when we've gone back year after year on a fight over the thing that we call CAFE, Corporate Average Fuel Economy Standards. Now, I think what's interesting is a shift that's taking place right now in that debate, in which you're seeing the whole issue really being discussed in terms of barrels of oil rather than miles per gallon, and in the context of energy security, and what are we going to do as a country to reduce our dependence on foreign oil and on oil that comes from remote, precious places like the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. But by shifting the terms of the debate, and there has been a pronounced shift, I think we're able to both get closer to the real issues and also get away from a lot of the political baggage that has bogged these debates and these discussions down in the past. It's much, much more difficult for a member of Congress to vote against a plan to save 2.5 million barrels a day of oil, as many people are suggesting we move to legislation with now, than it is for them to vote against another mile per gallon and allow an auto manufacturer to tell people that we're going to take away somebody's car.
It's also interesting, I mean, since the passage of the Clean Air and Clean Water Acts, I mean, a lot of the environmental progress has been made by environmental groups, like the NRDC, with lawyers fighting to protect our natural resources, like the Environmental Working Group, which comes up with these studies that show we've got, you know, mercury in fish and PCBs in breast milk, and they're the ones that are really making the difference. So they shouldn't be indicted. In my view, it's the government, the things that our Environmental Protection Agency should be doing, though.
Sure, and there are a lot of terrific organizations out there doing a lot of very important work and doing it in interesting ways and very successfully. But I do think it's certainly perfectly fair, and I think, you know, we ought to be able to stand the critique or certainly the question of whether or not that's effective and how it's moving. But I think that it's also unfair and unproductive, more importantly, to have that debate without looking at the environment in which we're having. And right now, of course, we are, when it comes to global warming, really playing a game of inches on multiple fronts against a clock with no timeouts left on it. And we're playing against an industry-backed White House that has proven itself willing time and time again to flout or to manipulate public opinion in order to dismantle environmental laws.
Well, my whole thing is you have to have an informed population to demand better, greener products, policies, and presidents. And that's why I do EcoTalk, to connect the dots between our oil consumption and our war and terrorism. And it's amazing how many people don't necessarily make those connections. Just last week I was talking to a friend who was very intelligent and informed, and she was saying, you know, Betsy, I was really concerned about the environment. It was one of my key issues before 9/11. But, you know, ever since then, we have so many other issues like terrorism and war. You know, I say, gee, there's a connection there. But that's what's not being made clear. And I blame in large part mainstream media, again, as well as our government, not so much the environmental establishment. And like you said, not to say things couldn't be done better. We need to reach out to people, I think, and talk about, you know, the connections between environment and health.
I think that's absolutely right. And certainly programs like this one are a big help and a huge step in the right direction. And, you know, the challenge for us at NRDC is to find as many ways to get through the media filters and today's popular culture and to speak in language that is relevant and get through all those traps.
And to the mainstream. It's, after all, environmental protection is not just for liberals and progressives.
Well, look, the environment is where we all live. It's where we raise our families. It's where we go to work. It's not something that you go visit on vacation. The environment is all around us. And so if...
In your SUV.
That may be, but people certainly, you know, and we find this with the media a great deal, that you, in fact, just today, speaking with a network reporter who shall remain nameless, when we called up to have a conversation about the incredibly corrupt energy bill that's moving through the House of Representatives, mm-hmm, under the guidance of Tom DeLay, mm-hmm, that he said, you know, I don't do environmental stories. Well, we said this isn't an environmental, mm-hmm, story. It's a security story. It's about politics. And by the way, did you see that even President Bush, of all people, said just a couple of days ago, that it made no sense at a time of record oil industry profits and $55 a barrel oil to be giving big new subsidies to these industries.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that,
mm-hmm,
caught his eye. Mm-hmm. And now we had a new story to talk about politics, to talk about energy security, and to break down some of those filters that you encounter in the media, where for any number of reasons, people unfortunately tend to throw up their hands and say, I don't do environmental.
Exactly,
stories.
Exactly.
And we need to rise.
Or I don't care about the environment, you know. I say, try going one day without it. No air, no water, no food. Come back and tell me it's not an issue for you.
Well, you know what? And we'll fight that battle, and we'll also fight the battle. This is fine. You don't care about the environment. Well, you know, care about this. And again, try and you link back to those issues, those solutions. Because we have to keep pressing forward with this dialogue, or we're going to be standing in one place for far too long, and we simply don't have the time to wait on major challenges, particularly global warming, where the window of opportunity to solve this problem is closing fast. We have the technology, we have the solutions, what we're missing is the leadership, and we've got a relatively short time to get there. So our view is try everything, and try it on as many fronts as you can, and be clever and be creative and be nimble with your debate and your dialogue, and that's how we're going to be moving forward.
So you would say rumors of environmentalism's death greatly exaggerated.
Greatly exaggerated.
John Kaufman.